Life,
a podcast of the cinema.
And what's your name? Who do you think you are?
I didn't know I was going to be grilled like this. Hi, I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm a film critic, and you are Dave White, and you're a film critic.
That's, yes, both of those things are true.
Yes.
And this is the show.
It is.
Hey.
Yes?
How do you feel? Actually, I have another question. It is completely unrelated to the question. I have two questions for you.
I didn't know this was going to be the gotcha media today.
That are unrelated. Both of them are unrelated.
Great.
But both of them are related to me.
Everyone is related to you.
Why is that association song in your head?
I don't know. It just popped in somehow. I had not...
We are not the association, apparently. Although, you know what? I have a lovely singing voice.
Never my love.
And you sometimes have a lovely singing voice, too.
Yeah.
When you're singing directly to me.
Of course.
I don't think we're good at harmonizing together.
Not particularly. that was a synapse that had not fired for a very long time.
And really?
Suddenly, yeah. I'd forgotten about that song, and somehow that came back into my head. And I think part of me wasn't even sure what it was called, because I thought maybe they were saying, never mind, comma, love.
How is it that you don't know that title? I think of you as being squarely in the spot of what the association did in their time.
You know what? I like a lot of their songs, but I'm constantly discovering, oh, they did that.
Right.
You know, for me, like, Never My Love is a song that I equate with, we lived in one of those suburban houses that had the loudspeakers in the room, or not the loudspeakers, but, you know, the
AKA my dream home.
the central speaker
system. You guys
system.
Had, okay, I'm an outsider, so I'm going to report on this house.
Okay, fine.
The house Alonzo Duraldi grew up in had an intercom system.
Thank you. That's
in the home, so that mom could push a button to any room in the house and say, get your ass up here and eat breakfast.
Right.
You in particular, Alonzo Duraldi, get out of bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the minute I walked into the house and saw the intercom system, I was like, oh. I bet they have a separate laundry room, too. And I was right.
The intercom came with the house. My parents did not install it.
Well, they didn't have the house built. They bought the house, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, okay. So,
I think they were the second family to live there.
But still, luxuriousness. Like, I was always sort of in love with that house. Mm. And I was only in it, like, a handful of times before your dad passed away and before the house got sold and everything else. But like every time I was in that house, I would just think, what a good place this is. Like, for also perfectly designed, because it was on a hill that sloped in a weird direction so that the back of the house was sort of underground, like the bottom level of the house was underground. And if you slept in one of those guest rooms, it stayed about 52 degrees in that room. Heaven.
No, well, we were lucky in that we stayed in that room after my brother and sister-in-law had been living there while their house was being renovated, and they put in blackout curtains. So between the blackout curtains and how cold that room gets, you and I slept like 14 hours on a shot. It was great.
Amazing.
Anyway, my mom almost never used the intercom for specific messaging. But what they would do to get us all out of bed in the morning on school days when we were being logy, they would play the easy listening station on the intercom and pump it into our rooms to make us get out of bed, because it was like, ugh, no, not that, you know. But of course, the unforeseen...
We're young people of the 1970s.
Exactly.
We like rock and roll.
Yeah. The unforeseen, lingering effect of all that is that, of course, now I am obsessed with easy listening.
Well, yeah. There's a reason to be obsessed with it, though, beyond that anecdote.
Yeah, okay.
It's great music.
It is.
It's just, it's perfect.
Yeah. It was 98.5 in Atlanta. And the whole time they were an easy listening station, they were great. 98. And then when I was in high school, they became a like adult contemporary pop station.
I'm less into that.
And they became the new 99. Can you guess what song they played to launch their new format?
No.
Toto's 99.
Yeah, I forgot that existed. Yes. I try to forget that Toto existed. And don't come at me about Africa being a great song. I don't give a damn about that either.
We were recently reminded by our friend Chris Gardner that Toto composed the score to David Lynch's Dune.
Did they?
Yes.
I don't remember that either.
Yes, they did. Anyway, so yeah, so Never My Love just popped in my head this morning. I don't know.
Okay. I don't think you own any association records.
No, but I need to start.
You have so much else from that era of that genre,
yeah,
of that style.
Because between
that soft, quiet, you know, mom music.
Yeah, between Windy and Come On In, like, yeah. I'm down for the association.
Yeah,
I think I need to start building it up.
And like the Left Bank and.
I mean, the Free Design, obviously.
The Free Design, clearly, you know. Yeah. Okay, here's my second unrelated question.
Shoot.
How do you feel about lemon cookies? I'm thinking of making some lemon sugar cookies. I want to make them. I'm going to make them. I don't actually care what you think about them.
What is the
They're happening.
Point? You're making them anyway.
Yeah.
When you ask me, my first thought is, not my, like, go-to, but... If I've learned anything during this period of homeboundness...
Yes, say it. It is say that... it. Say it. I'm touching myself. Say it.
It is that while I don't ever think of fruit desserts as being my go-to...
Uh-huh. Is that the case? Or are you mistaken?
Every fruit dessert you have made so far has been delicious.
That's correct. That is correct.
You wonder why I don't tell you this.
I have
often.
Dominated you with a variety of fruit-based desserts.
You have made some really incredible fruit-based desserts. So I would say, yes, make the lemon cookies. Dazzle me.
That's a given at this point.
Will they be covered in...
I don't know yet.
In coarse sugar.
I don't know if I want to do the sanding sugar, the coarse sanding sugar, or if I want to make lemon sugar, which is where you take regular old granulated table sugar and mix it with a lot of lemon zest so that it infuses into the sugar and you get a lemony flavored sugar. Or if maybe I want to make like a lemon glaze to go on top of it. Like maybe
simple
like
syrup.
Candy up some... Little tiny shreds of peel for on top. Who knows what I'm going
to do?
So
many options.
Yeah,
now,
are.
Is making lemon sugar, is that like vanilla sugar where you split the bean and put it in the jar with the thing?
Yeah. Okay. Only vanilla sugar, you want to make that. You want to take a vanilla bean and put it in the sugar and leave that for like a month and really let it get intense.
You don't want the rind to rot on you.
Lemon sugar, that zest will knock up your sugar beautifully.
Sure.
Did I just say it will knock up your sugar beautifully?
Yes, you did.
Okay, well.
Your sugar will be pregnant with lemon flavor.
It will become pregnant with lemon flavor very quickly in a course of a few hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
I leave it to you to decide which.
I hadn't thought about those words as they were coming out of my mouth, which is.
Welcome to the program.
Common for me. I would like to talk about films. Cinema. The cinema.
Why not?
Here's what we're not going to talk about this week. We have not yet seen The Secret. And I know that shocks a lot of you because we've been clamoring for it.
We were really eager for it.
But we just ran out of time.
Yeah, we're getting to it.
But we're going
to
watch it. We're going to watch it this week. We're going to watch it this week. And we're going to talk about it next week.
Yes. We're putting that out into the universe that next week will be reviewed.
It's already happened. I mean, the film dropped. All we have to do is...
I said we're putting out of the universe that next week we're reviewing it.
Yeah, but that's not... Okay. You don't understand The Secret.
Clearly, I don't.
The Secret isn't, I make a plan, I'm going to do a thing, and it's clear and easy that this, it's like the secret isn't I'm going to go to the grocery store tomorrow because the grocery store is two blocks away.
Gotcha.
And I'm going to walk there and I'm going to put my intention to go to the grocery store out into the universe. And the universe is going to reward me with a visit to the grocery store.
And win the lottery.
There you go.
Gotcha. Yes.
I will sell this house today. That is the secret. All right.
For instance,
the one good thing about that movie. So the there's one other good thing about that movie, and that's Marissa Jarrett Winoker as the drive-through.
Yes, yes, yes.
The drive-through girl.
Yes.
Yeah. She works at the fast food restaurant. She's the girl in the drive-through.
We all remember.
Can I tell you a funny little story about that? When I interviewed her, this is a million years ago.
Mm.
I interviewed her right after she'd won the Tony for Hairspray.
Uh-huh.
And she said, I will tell you something about how dumb I am. I said, I would love that. She said, I got paid something like $50,000 to be an American Beauty.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, this is great. This is going to last forever. I'm just going to keep doing jobs like this, and I'm going to keep getting this kind of money. Maybe they didn't pay her upfront that amount, but it's like she ended up getting that amount somehow, like, over the time.
Yeah.
And she said, and then I found out that was not the case. She's like, I'm, you know, out selling DVDs. She goes, I didn't have money. She goes, I'm in this big movie and I have no money.
How did that happen?
So anyway, she's a delight, by the way. Anyone, if you ever run into her, she has no idea who I am. I interviewed her once. But she's delightful.
Duly noted.
But we're not talking about The Secret this week.
Next time.
The Secret will happen next week. Also, what else are we not talking about this week? Money Plane. Now,
you're obsessed.
It was impressed upon me that I must watch Money Plane. And I was not paying attention to it at all. It looked like just a dumb nothing movie. And
but it's a dumb something movie? Is that the idea?
Apparently it's a dumb something movie.
I see.
Apparently it's like...
So dumb.
Apparently it's Hurricane Heist level dumb, and that is clearly...
Attention must be paid.
Very attractive to me. We're going to watch Money Plane.
Okay.
Yeah. But what we watched before... No. What we watched instead was... Host.
Yes.
Now, Host is a feature film.
Right.
And the reason it is a feature film is because it is over 1 hour long.
Right.
Having said that, it is essentially Dumbo in that it is exactly 63 or 4 or 5-ish minutes long. Like, it's just squeaking past...
Over that finish line.
The finish line of now you're a feature.
Right.
Right. Instead of a short. But, you know, look at some of those old movies from, like, the 20s and 30s.
Oh, sure, yeah. Or like
those were, like...
B-movies from the 30s and
60, 40s. 60, 65, 70 minutes tops.
Yeah.
Bresson's Joan of Arc movie is, like, 65 minutes.
Hmm.
Oh, and you earn every one of those minutes, too. But the... So this one, Host... was made entirely remotely.
Right.
All of the actors are in different locations. It is a Zoom-based film in that it was shot via Zoom and directed also via Zoom.
Yeah.
Like, no one was in a room with anyone else that they didn't already, like, live with at the time of the virus shutting everything down. So...
And the entire film is structured like a Zoom call.
Yes.
There is one crossover between performers.
And I assume that means they are in the same home.
Or something, yeah. Yeah. But beyond anyway, that, yeah.
Anyway, it's from filmmaker, a guy named Rob Savage. I guess British.
Yeah, pretty much all the...
Most of the cast is British.
Except for one of the leads, yeah.
And up until this point, he's made short films and British television.
Gotcha.
So this is about six friends who hire a psychic, a medium, to perform essentially a seance via Zoom.
Yeah, like a remote seance.
Because they're bored.
Yeah.
Because they want to do something. Because they're stuck in their homes. It is a film that takes place right now.
Mm-hmm.
People are quarantined in their homes. And everyone in the group isn't exactly taking it seriously.
Right.
And I've never participated in a real-life seance. But according to the film, that if you don't take it seriously and you sort of act like a goof and you invite any old spirit into the seance, any old spirit might show up.
Exactly.
Yeah. So for the next hour and a few minutes,
that happens.
Any old spirit shows up.
You, when we were talking about this yesterday to some friends of ours, you brought up the five obstructions,
which yes.
I thought was a brilliant comparison.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. It was brilliant. The
why don't you explain to people what that is?
The Five Obstructions is a documentary film from what year?
90...
Early 2000s, late 90s?
It was during the Dogma 95 period, right? So,
yeah,
late 90s, I want to say. It's Lars von Trier and this other filmmaker.
You taught this.
I showed segments from it in a class that I did. Yeah,
okay.
When I was teaching at
Chapman. Talk about what the film is.
So the idea of the film is that you have... one filmmaker sort of challenging another filmmaker. All right, I want you to make this film, but you have to abide by these five rules.
Yeah.
So it's like, it has to be one uninterrupted take, or no shot can last longer than 3 seconds, you know, or, you know, like whatever. You kind of come up with these things, and then the filmmaker has to take those challenges and then figure out, like, how do I tell this story? How do I assemble this thing? And... the class that I taught at Chapman was about the idea of how do you take what would seem to be a hurdle and turn it into an advantage. And this movie is that. It's like,
yeah.
No one's shooting anything. Nobody can shoot anything right now, or at least, you know, they're just starting to kind of try to figure out how to get back geared up into all that.
Uh-huh.
So with this, it's like, all right, we're all at home, we're all on Zoom. How do I make a movie? And not just that, how do I make an effective horror movie where, you know, this stuff is happening and we're all separated and we have to sort of, I can only direct you via Zoom. Whatever kind of effects take place, we have to figure out how to work that out.
Right.
And, you know, the results are pretty impressive.
It's really inventive and really impressive, and particularly in the realm of effects, because what's happening is anything that goes on in a room, the actor is the one sort of facilitating this effect happening.
I mean, I'm sure there was some post. Probably.
I'm sure there was some post. I'm sure there was a little digital this or that.
Yeah.
And I don't know what, because it doesn't look like anything is digital. It looks like everything is a practical effect.
Sure.
And
it's all, you know, because of the Zoom limitation, it is essentially happening in quote-unquote real time.
Right, because a Zoom call can only last, like, what, 45 minutes?
Well, I don't just mean that, but I mean in terms of we're watching one uninterrupted stream. Like, once the movie starts, there's no cuts. There's no jumping ahead in time. It all just flows out. Yeah, the one bit of, like, reality I would throw in is that, you know, a free Zoom call, if you're not paying for Zoom, I think can't last more than 40 minutes.
Oh, 40 minutes.
And in this one, they make it like an hour, but, you know, whatever. It works.
Right. The other thing is that there are some pretty cool surprise / shock effects.
Mm-hmm.
That took me by surprise, and I was so focused on everything that normally I'm, as we've discussed in the past, I'm kind of immune to the jump scare.
Right.
Because I'm so into horror movies and I can I know the beats and I know the sound. I know how they are sound designed sometimes, so that like
it's very quiet.
Yeah, it's like quiet, loud, jumpy, you know. And so I am always happy when I'm taken by surprise.
Sure.
And so this movie took me by surprise a couple times. It is in debt, of course, to the film Unfriended, which came out a few years ago, which is kind of the same story.
There are a lot of parallels, for sure.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen, is it Searching?
I still haven't seen Searching.
Yeah, I haven't either.
So it's in debt to that. It's also obviously in debt to the Paranormal Activity films, to Blair Witch, where everything is very low to the ground, cheaply made, uses, I guess I just get rid of Blair Witch in this, but the Paranormal Activity comparison.
Lo-fi.
Is domestic stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's in your house. Whatever is going to happen to you is already in your house.
Right.
And
this one with the added thing of like, and you can't really leave.
And you can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So ultimately, unlike Paranormal Activity, where you could run out of that house and go to a new house, and then it would follow you. It's that this is a film about being afraid and stuck in your house, which is what is happening in the world right now. You know, if you're in a place that's currently under a more strict lockdown, you know, mandate, then you are probably sort of in your house, unless you have a job that necessitates you leaving your house. You know, you and I, our jobs went away at the beginning of this and have not come back yet.
Right.
And so we are here. And we still are here. It's month five or whatever, going on six. And that is a situation that's, you know, affecting lots of people, you know.
Yeah.
And so it is a film about that. It is a film about being stuck at home with what makes you afraid.
Right.
Only in this case, what makes you afraid is actually coming to get you in your house.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is as zeitgeisty as movies get, for sure.
Yeah.
But beyond that, and beyond its sort of the gimmick of its structure, as a horror movie, it's pretty dang effective.
Yeah. So I like this.
Yeah. It is on Shudder exclusively. If you want a free 30-day trial of Shudder, this is not an ad, but just, you know, if you want to see this movie and you don't want to subscribe to another streaming service, you get 30 days for free with the promo code SHUTIN.
S-U-H.
S-H-U-T-I-N.
I know how to spell shut. S-U-H, of course.
S-H-U-T-I-N, all one word. So 30 days. So, you know, give it a shot. It's worth it to see this movie, I think.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's fun. Then we also...
Speaking of streaming.
We saw Black is King.
Yes.
The new experimental film from Beyoncé and 10 other people.
Yes.
Which I think is very cool.
Yes. I think, you know, we were sort of talking about like how this equates to the art world where you have like the principal artist whose name is on the you know, finished work.
Yeah.
But then you have like the other people who put that together, and in some cases those people are remain anonymous, whereas here at least all of her collaborators are credited, apparently.
Yeah, this is a big grand statement of a film.
Yes.
And it's what, like 75-80 minutes long,
something like that. Yeah. I mean, I've heard it called a visual concept album.
It's a visual album. It's also, but there's a tradition of that in cinema.
Sure.
Things, films that have been released into theaters that were essentially a band visually telling you the story of an album.
Yeah, like, or, you know, Daft Punk.
Using an album to visually tell you a story.
Right.
You know? Daft Punk, well, that wasn't in theaters, though. So,
Didn't it get some theatrical? their anime?
The anime? Maybe not that I knew about.
Okay, maybe not.
All right. Anyway. It's, you know, a lot of new songs that I haven't heard yet.
Mm-hmm.
So they haven't stuck with me.
Sure, it's a first listen.
Like, in my head, currently, I'm thinking, I like Lemonade better. Well, that's just because I know all the Lemonade songs.
Sure.
And so, and I can hum a Lemonade song right now. Or, don't ask me to sing one, because I'm not a beautiful singer person like Beyonce. But the...
You do have hot sauce in your bag, though.
If I had a bag, if I had a bag that I carried, well, I do have a messenger bag.
You do. Which brand? Like Red Rooster or?
I like Red Rooster. Okay. I thought you were asking me what brand my messenger bag
no,
was.
No, nobody needs to know that.
The I like Red Rooster. Red Rooster is what they have on the counter at the gumbo pot at the farmer's market here. Mm-hmm. And when I go there and I get a catfish po' boy, with those little lemon slices on top.
Mm-hmm.
I just spray that Red Rooster all over it. Well, I douse it, really.
Are you meant to eat those lemon slices? Or are they not just there?
It's in the sandwich.
Okay.
So it's inside the bread.
They're not there to be squoze.
On top
they're
of the catfish. There to be no, they're in slices.
Okay.
Oh. You eat them. Mm. Rind and all. Oh, it's so good.
You're hardcore.
God. But they're thin. They're thin, okay, thinly sliced lemon slices on top of the catfish po' boy. Listen, don't argue with me about that because I'm right.
I want the details. You do you.
Anyway, if I had a bag that I carried condiments around in, see, my messenger bag only has ever gone with me to back-to-back film screenings.
Right.
So like, Back before we were out going to press screenings,
mm-hmm.
if I had to go to a noon movie
yeah.
out somewhere such as like the Wilshire screening room,
mm-hmm.
and then 2 hours later had to be somewhere else in another weird part of town, like at the Landmark.
Sure.
Messenger bag, laptop, go sit at Starbucks in between. Movies.
Gotcha.
You must do some work.
Right.
There's nothing at Starbucks that needs hot sauce.
Yeah.
I have those little Maldon sea salt.
I was going to say, your condiments bag would have the hot sauce. Would have the little tins of Maldon sea salt.
They're little travel size tins you like put in a lunchbox.
Yes. And
they're great.
You would have one of those foil packets of Duke's mayonnaise that I got you.
Yes. Also those. Chrissy Teigen, I've said this before, Chrissy Teigen apparently carries a bottle of like log cabin syrup in her purse. Oh,
yeah. Like if it were genuine maple syrup, I that gets a pass. But log cabin? No. Anyway, Black is King.
So, I haven't heard the album as it is, just, you know.
Yes. The audio experience.
So what we have here is both the music and the visual. It is, because it is directed by, you know, a lot of different people who are all bringing sort of like their visions, you know, to one place under the supervision of director Beyonce Knowles. The
is it Knowles Carter now?
Maybe that's
I think she's just Beyonce.
Oh, she's just Beyonce as just one word.
That's Beyonce. My understanding. I could be wrong.
Anyway, look, in the song she gives you her full name. That first or second
that's
song.
True, yes.
She does the whole name. All of it is loosely, first of all, each contribution, each sequence is this stunningly gorgeous sort of abstract experience that is part, again, part experimental film, as you said, I think, earlier, a few days ago, part fashion shoot.
Yes.
And loosely hung on the
Lion King.
The Lion King?
Yeah.
Which I think is sort of like the weakest element of it. Although maybe it isn't, because at the end of the film, she says she's dedicating it to her
Son.
3-year-old son. And she has three kids, Blue Ivy, who's in this, and then the twins, whose names I cannot remember. But one of the twins is a boy and one's a girl. And
I mean, yeah, part of me kind of feels like this is how she got Disney on board. Oh, it's going to be attached to the Lion Kings, you know?
she dedicates it to her son, but also to black men.
Yes.
And so in that way, Lion King is relevant as the story of a male, child who grows up to, fulfill his grand, destiny.
And
And
there's a recurring motif throughout of, you know, we are all kings, we are all rulers of our own destiny. And really, a thing that I thought was rather bold for any kind of like just to hear in pop culture, there's a quote from somebody like, you know, if I am a child of God, then how am I not God myself?
Right.
And I was like, okay. I suspect some people may take issue with that line, but all
Let
right.
them. Let them. Listen, here's the thing about Beyonce. Every word that comes out of her mouth gets dissected, and every image in a film she makes, every song gets pulled apart and
Right.
analyzed, and it's done in good faith by black critics, and is done in extremely bad faith by people who want to get her,
Right.
by all the weirdo Illuminati people who think that she's actually some Italian woman, by the garden variety racists. Like, Fox News will be all over this, and they
Oh, I'm
will
sure.
have an idiot's play date with it. And so the idiots being them. And so, because any time a black creator asserts independence from like any kind of white structure,
Yes.
it makes white people lose their minds. And so that is currently, I'd say, in the past, since a little bit before Lemonade, that is Beyoncé's place in the world right now.
Yeah.
She's not just, another pop diva. She's on a mission.
Yeah,
And
she
it's a wonderful
Yeah,
one
she is
that makes people
centering
upset.
blackness here. She is centering her power as a woman here, and the power of all women and the power of all black people. And you know, shooting it in these gorgeous African locations, the shorelines and the veldts and whatnot. You know, incorporating, you know, the featurings are people like Kendrick Lamar and
Pharrell.
Pharrell, but
Yeah.
then also all these like,
Jay-Z's in it.
right, but then you've also got like African musicians like Yemi Alade and Wizkid and Shatta Wale. So yeah, there is this cumulative impact that this has, even though it is, like you said, a very experimental kind of, it is very disparate in terms of going from one place to another, one idea to another.
One gripe. Do I have to hear someone saying Hakuna Matata to me? Must I?
Look, you sign up for Lion King, that's just
I
gotta
know.
be in there.
I know. I know.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's probably the least
Because
interesting.
every time the Lion King stuff would pop up, I'd be like, okay,
Oh, yeah, right.
can we
Cuz
just do the
she
next bit,
cuz
please?
all cuz
Like, yeah.
cuz all of the messaging and all of the ideas in this could exist completely independently of the Lion King.
Absolutely. Absolutely, which I think makes your speculative idea possibly true. Like, she makes the Lion King remake, and then she says to Disney, "Hey, I have this great idea."
Well, my thought is like that just her when they approach her to be in the movie,
Yeah.
she's like, I have a couple of, you know,
I have demands.
I have demands. One, I sing the I compose and sing the original song in
Correct.
This.
Yes.
And then two, I have a concept in mind, and it really ties back to Lion King, so you'll like it. I don't know.
I think that meeting really happened exactly that way. Because what are they going to say? No, Beyonce, you can't.
Yeah, we're not interested in
your visual
album.
It doesn't matter what
album.
She tells them. They're going to say, oh, yes.
Yes, ma'am.
We want in your business
yeah.
for this. Like, it's we want to be in business with you for this.
And
for
you
sure.
know, and to extend this notion even further, I think there's almost something subversive about the idea of her taking the Lion King herself, because the Lion King is completely created by white people. The original screenplay,
oh, yeah.
the original score,
okay.
you know, Julie Taymor, like along, I mean, yes, there have been black people involved, and, you know, James Earl Jones is one of the,
Obviously,
was, you know,
yes.
but like, you know, Matthew Broderick, come on. Like, you know, there is a lot of whiteness attached to this very sort of like African specific
right.
storytelling.
Right.
And so the idea of like that is now that it now becomes Beyonce's to do with as she wishes
yeah.
is kind of a cool sort of cultural reclamation.
Yes. So this is good. This is good. You should watch this.
Yeah, and I'm not like you know. I'm busy listening to the Association. I'm not really yeah. like. I don't have Beyonce in the shuffle, but just as a thing to look at and listen to, I was really impressed. There's just this constant. You know, just when you get used to this one, you know, sort of visual palette and you know, kind of musical thing, we're on to the next thing, and mm-hmm. it's also interesting. And so, yeah, I found it really compelling.
It's gorgeous. It has meaning. What else do you want?
There you go. And now there is an album that this is connected to.
I'm supposing.
I think.
I don't know.
Okay.
I assume there will be.
Gotcha.
If there isn't one already.
Okay.
If it's not already out there.
Oh, here we go. Sorry, I got the wiki page. The film serves as a visual companion to the 2019 album The Lion King, The Gift, a tie-in album curated by Beyonce for the 2019 remake of The Lion King.
So that album already existed?
That album exists.
I just thought there was a Lion King soundtrack out there. That was very confusing to me.
There are multiple. Remember in the remember
and
the
where 80s? Were all the people I know on social media who love Beyonce so much? Why weren't they talking about it?
Good point. Yeah, usually like that's a this is an event when a new
my
Beyonce
friends have let me down once
harumph.
Again.
What else are we talking about this week?
I don't know. Hang on, pull up my list.
Y'all, we've been doing the show for almost 10 years. Did you know?
Summerland.
Ah.
Summerland. Now, I would tell you something. I had no idea this movie even existed until last Thursday?
I think so, yeah.
Wednesday? Something like that. And I said, what do you have to watch tonight for breakfast all day? The other podcast that I'm not a part of. And you said, I have to watch Summerland. I go, what's that? Sounds like a WB show.
It was. Different thing, though.
Fresh Summerland. The WB.
I'm sure Lori Loughlin is looking to get that revived.
Was she on it?
She was.
Oh, really? That ain't happening. And then you said, oh, it's this World War II movie with Gemma Arterton. And I said, what? Then I go look it up. I find out that, like, she plays a writer who lives in a cottage by the sea. And it's World War II. And she's wearing, like, cool period clothing. And everyone else is as well. Just inject that into my veins.
Yeah. We didn't even get to the lesbian flashbacks with Gugu Mbatha-Raw
yeah.
part, and you were already on board.
And then we watched it.
And it's
dumb.
Fine.
It's dumb.
It's also kind of dumb, but it's fine.
But it is dumb in the way that if my mom were
oh,
around
for
still...
sure. Yeah, no, this is a, if you were
I
still.
would be, listen, when I was in my 20s and 30s before my mom had her stroke, I lived in Fort Worth. She lived over in far northeast Dallas suburbs. We would meet in the middle at the North Park Mall. We'd have lunch. We'd go shopping. We'd see a movie. This was about a once a month experience. Every month we would meet on a Saturday, spend the Saturday there at the mall, eating, shopping, seeing any movie that happened to be at the North Park 1 and 2.
Oh, such a beautiful theater. They tore it down.
This is the kind of movie that I would
Oh,
have taken her to, and she would have
this is,
loved it.
speaking of Dallas, this is the kind of movie that would have screened at the Inwood for like 6 months. You know, in between Merchant Ivory releases.
Having said that, it is not good. It is the story of a woman who is a self-imposed sort of recluse. She's working on an academic thesis
About folklore.
about folklore and about the creation of myths. It is, of course, in the middle of World War II, and
The
suddenly
Blitz is
the
happening.
Blitz is happening in London, and suddenly and without warning, without even knowing that this was supposed to be happening, they send a kid to her door, an evacuee from London. They sent a lot of kids to live in the
Out in the
countryside
country, yeah.
with people who volunteered to take kids. Well, she didn't volunteer.
And she didn't see
And
the
she
letter
doesn't
about it
know.
because the local kids like to stuff her mailbox with
The
dirt.
local kids treat her like a witch. Everyone in town thinks she's weird and spooky, and they
Yeah.
don't talk to her. And in spite of the fact that she's Gemma Arterton,
Come
come on.
on.
And so the kid shows up. She hates the kid. She doesn't want anything to do with the kid. And the first 30 minutes of this film, she is deliciously cruel to everyone, including this child.
Including, and there's a scene where she's cruel to another kid that is one of the biggest laughs I've had in a while,
Not
I gotta
violently
admit.
so, just a
No, just
mean.
mean.
And so, and then of course,
The child melts the
the
heart of the
child melts
crusty
her heart.
curmudgeon. And there are lesbian flashbacks with Gugu
And there, yes,
Mbatha-Raw.
what you learn is that the reason she's a recluse is because the love of her life
Married a dude because she really wanted kids.
married a guy because she really wanted a child. And then she never saw her again. And so that's part of her pain that keeps her isolated. And the
And
kid comes and sort of thaws that
thaws
out, and
and
everyone is all
nicey nice.
nice and adorable after that.
The way that when they show her like going into those memories, the sort of flashes of memory, and how it just like it's like a stab in her
It
heart.
physically hurts her.
I thought that was interestingly
Well,
put
she's a
together.
great actress.
Yes, and but it
She's
was
great at doing these things.
the editing also, I thought. Jessica Swale is the writer director. It is her first feature film. It is an original screenplay. It is so corny. We assume that it had to be based on like an old novel or something, but nope. It's a
And
fresh
there is a
Summerland.
there's a twist that we won't spoil for you, but about 40% of the way through the movie, I turned to you on the couch and said, "I know what the twist is." And it wasn't even a thing where anybody told us, "Oh, there's a twist." I sat there and I looked at you and I said, "There's a twist, and I know what it is, and here's what it is. I'm right." And then I was
You were
right.
right.
So, but again, won't spoil it, but I'll tell you something. If you remember us talking about
The bookshop.
The Bookshop, is that what the name of it was?
The bookshop.
The Bookshop. Not to be confused with the documentary called The
The
Booksellers that
booksellers.
we reviewed a few months ago. There was a British film from 2018, 2019 called The Bookshop with Emily Mortimer.
Yes, and Bill Nye, 2017.
2017. And boy, was it stupid. And
You guys, books.
but it was so dumb in the way that I love a dumb movie to be. Everything else about it, in spite of the fact that it was dumb, was just the coziest.
It was the tweediest.
It was the coziest movie.
Tea sauceriest movie.
And this is the same. Yeah. This is the same kind of cozy movie.
And you get a little Penelope Wilton. You get a little bit, Tom Courtenay. A little bit. You know.
A little bit.
There are pleasures to be had
here. Yeah. The outfits are absurd. It's as though there was an Esprit store in 1942 in a rural village.
It's not that bad.
And everything looks design wise like it's of period, but the colors are just so like
vibrant,
candy colored and intoxicating, and you're like, everything was brown then. Get out of here.
So if you know what you're in for, that's what you're in for.
It's
if you want to see a really good Gemma Arterton movie about the Blitz in World War II, watch Their Finest.
Their Finest.
My favorite film of 2017.
It's a beautiful. Their Finest is beautiful.
Oh, so good.
This is silly.
It's ridiculous. But you know, it's a nice cup of tea.
But I was thrilled to be there
for
all whatever 100 minutes of it. I was so happy to be watching this dumb, dumb film.
In the village.
This twist is so stupid that when it happens and you realize that you were right for predicting it, you're disappointed in yourself and the film for being like, you're like, oh, they're not going to do that. Oh, no, they are doing
you
that.
Both,
and they
you
think
both,
they're getting away with
you
it.
You both see it coming and then can't believe they did it. It's one of those.
So, yeah, watch it. I'm super into it. It sucks, but I like it.
Is that it?
Okay, well, I also want to put something on the radar of some people.
Okay.
Hello, friends. Are you queer?
Oh, yeah.
Because if you are, I'm not, listen, you don't have to be queer.
I was going
to
say.
To like this.
Don't limit it.
But it is of a special interest to people who have an interest in the history of queer cinema. Okay. Because very often what we talk about when we talk about the history of queer cinema is stuff like, you know, Mädchen in Uniform,
sure.
Or
Mädchen
in Uniform, or
Victim,
you know, Victim, or like mainstream film that slowly begin to take on
right. The
subject matter.
The Killing of Sister George.
Yes. The name of this experimental feature is called Ask Any Buddy, B-U-D-D-Y. Hmm. Ask a buddy. Ask anybody. Now, Ask Anybody, I believe, began its existence as an Instagram account.
Oh, okay.
There is an Instagram account called Ask Anybody. And what they post on this Instagram account is vintage gay male pornography stuff. Not clips from porn, but like posters and flyers and print ads and, you know, still photos of unusual moments in these films.
Mm-hmm.
Non-sexual moments. And what Ask Anybody is a collage sort of documentary, experimental documentary, that without any narration shows you the evolution of sex between men in the 1970s into the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
So like
portrayals thereof.
Over 100 films
chopped
up and pieced together that were made between 1970 and 1985.
Okay.
And it is... What?
Came up with a pun, but it's not for a clean podcast.
Okay, you can tell me off the mic.
It's based on Christian Markley's The Clock.
Okay. Sure. All right.
May I continue? Please do.
All right. What you get in this film is some of the actual, sex that took place in the original, features. But a lot of what you're seeing is the extra stuff, the narrative stuff, the non-sexual stuff,
mm-hmm.
the shots of, the gay world of the 1970s, and particularly the spaces that gay men sort of built for themselves as sexual spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of them pretty much now lost and gone.
Right.
The spaces.
Gentrified.
Yeah. So this becomes a really fascinating time capsule of what gay men would do when given the opportunity to present their own sexual lives in film.
Mm.
Because in the 1970s, and younger people won't remember this, and you and I were much too young, we were children,
sure,
in the 1970s, but even if you were a child in the 1970s, you were aware somehow over here somewhere,
mm-hmm.
that there was such a thing as an X-rated movie,
right,
that you were not allowed to see.
You saw ads in the paper.
And there were print ads for these X-rated movies in pretty much any newspaper.
Yeah, Linda Lovelace was going on The Tonight Show.
Yeah. And that is because pornography had sort of graduated, heterosexual pornography,
yeah.
had sort of graduated to what was almost the mainstream.
There was a hot minute where, like, married couples would go to suburban theaters to yes. see an X-rated movie, and it was thought that X would just be R,
thing that would happen.
Yeah, it would just be this level where hardcore pornography would be incorporated into mainstream narrative cinema.
Yeah, which is why those films all had stories.
Yeah.
And, sequences of people not having sex, sequences of people just, acting the story.
Right,
the
right, film. Right.
And well, so
it's kind of like how, when we watch old French New Wave films,
yeah.
That part of the appeal for me, and I think for you also, is that because they were so low budget and they didn't like build sets or anything, it gives you this almost sort of documentary look of like,
right.
what does a bar in Paris look like? What does a pinball arcade in Paris in the 1960s look like? Or
right.
a recording studio
you
or whatever.
Get to see them, yeah.
Yeah.
So the thing about, because we were children back then, there was this vague awareness of, grown-ups go to see these movies, and in these movies, people are naked.
Yeah.
And we don't know what it is they're doing when they're naked, but they're doing something.
Adults.
Naked people do things. Grown-ups do naked things, and
yeah.
we don't exactly know what that means.
Yeah. We hadn't grasped the concept of it yet.
Yeah. What is it they do once they take off their clothes? Like, the... So this film is about that parallel world. Where gay men were like, well, we're here now, we're not going back. And part of the 1970s for gay men was a highly sexualized subculture that they built that was simultaneously political as well.
Sure.
Because that was part of your liberation.
Yeah.
And these films document that liberation. In all the ways that it could happen. So anyway, this film from a director named Evan Purcell or Purcell, P-U-R-C-H-E-L-L,
mm-hmm.
Is all about that.
Hmm.
Again, it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
The Wicked Queer Film Festival,
mm-hmm.
Boston's LGBT, I don't know if they have more than one, but there's an LGBT film festival in Boston called Wicked Queer, which I think is a brilliant
great
name.
They
have had it streaming via their own platform.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where it's going to go after they stop.
Well, Outfest has not announced its titles yet.
Right.
It's going to be running online from, I want to say, the 24th to the 30th of August. I'm not positive on those dates. Go to outfest.org. But anyway,
I streamed it last Thursday.
I'm pretty sure that I wouldn't be surprised if it popped up in the Outfest lineup. I don't know for a fact.
I expect that even if it's currently this minute not available on any platform, it will be
eventually. Yes,
it will be again soon to stream again.
Yeah, it is in what passes for the festival circuit in 2020.
Right,
when festivals aren't happening in real time spaces. Eventually, yes, I'm sure this movie will get a distributor. I'm sure it will be available to rent or purchase streaming or another physical media.
Right.
But for right now, keep an eye out on LGBT festivals. And, you know, here's the thing. They don't have to be the LGBT festival in your town. You watched it from Boston.
Yeah,
I
watched
anywhere.
The Boston one, yeah. So the, anyway, it's called Ask Anybody.
Yeah.
If this sounds like something you're interested in, go watch it because it's cool.
All right. Well, I have a streaming pick for this week.
Do you?
Speaking of LGBT films.
Uh-huh.
Gayby, G-A-Y-B-Y, uh-huh. is currently available on Hulu.
Yeah.
And it's a very charming comedy about a gay guy and his straight female best friend who decide that they maybe want to have a kid together and the various complications that ensue in all of that. It stars Matthew Wilkes, who is very unfairly both very funny and very attractive. So, like, I don't know how that happens, but it's really got to stop. Jen Harris is the female lead.
Wait a second. What does that mean about me? I am both very funny and very attractive.
You are very attractive.
That's true.
But you know what I'm talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Cover of Out magazine attractive.
That's what I am as well.
Okay, yes. Anyway, written and directed by Jonathan Lasecki. It's very funny. If you missed it during its Queer
Full
Festival...
Full disclosure, we are friends with Jonathan.
We are friends with Jonathan. If you missed it during its Queer Film Festival run or its, you know, later distribution, it is now on Hulu. It couldn't be easier. Watch Gaby. It's a lot of fun.
Nightfall.
Ooh, yeah.
Nightfall from Jacques Tourneur.
Mm-hmm.
Director of Cat People.
The original.
Out of the Past. This is a noir that happens in the snow. This is a... This is a... Well, part of it happens in the snow. This is a noir from 1956. It stars my 50s movie boyfriend, Aldo Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And Anne Bancroft.
Is this like how... Like her first movie or one of her first movies?
Hello. I'm going to find out the answer to that question right now. How many films did she do before Nightfall? Why don't you vamp a little bit while I'm scrolling
down IMDb?
Oh,
wow. Brian Keith is in this movie?
Brian Keith is one of the bad guys.
Wow. And of course, you picked a movie that is not streaming or available.
Available. It's available. You can get a DVD somewhere.
No. I'm just looking it up now.
No, you can. I just looked that up.
I
did, in fact, look that up.
I see there was a DVD that existed, but I don't know that it's in print. Anyway, we saw it on the Movies! Exclamation point channel, so I suspect it will turn up there again.
It is available out in the world somewhere. There are DVDs of it. You can go buy one.
If you say so.
Also, it will show up on, you know, TCM and, like you said, the Movies! Exclamation point channel.
Which is this odd... Like,
this was
terrestrial
not the first
channel
thing that she was in.
That shows...
Are you even listening?
I am, yes.
Okay.
They show movies uncut, but they do throw in commercials. And one could watch it on YouTube.
I see. Well, anyway. Aldo Ray plays a man in hiding.
Mm.
Now, how you hide when you are that guy... is sort of a mystery to me because you're like this big strapping blonde football player looking dude. You stand out in a crowd. People turn their heads and look at you like, "Well, hello."
Well, it's not like what's his face, Chris Hemsworth in Black Hat, where he puts on sunglasses so as not to be recognized.
Right.
But he's like the one blonde 6'3", you know, white Westerner in an airport in China.
Right. So anyway, he's hiding. And yet people are watching him and tailing him. Mm. He's being simultaneously tailed by two very, very bad men.
Mm-hmm.
And by an insurance inspector.
Played by James Gregory.
And we don't know why. The bad men are Brian Keith and I'm blanking on who else. But he goes into a restaurant bar. He meets Anne Bancroft. She's a model.
Yes.
She's very, very young in this film. And they go out onto the street. They immediately click mm-hmm. and start talking. And I got to tell you, the scenes that they have together mm-hmm. in this film are... Those two had a thing on camera.
Interesting.
In a way that you could really feel. It's just very sort of romantic chemistry that they have.
Hmm. It's called acting.
Yeah. They go back out on the sidewalk after they finish having dinner. They've just met. And in come the bad guys who immediately say to Anne Bancroft, "You can go. You've been very helpful to us."
Ooh.
And she runs off. And you think, wait a second, is Anne Bancroft chasing him too and we don't know it?
Is she in on it?
Is she in on it? And what you get for the next, like, hour is a slow unfolding of who these men are, why they're chasing him, what role he played in, you know, the bad events that took place.
What he did to be chased.
What he did to be chased. What the insurance guy wants, what Anne Bancroft wants, even though you think you might know at this point, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
It ends in the middle of like a snowstorm somewhere with like a giant snowplow that's going to come and demolish all of them if they don't get themselves untied. And eventually the bad guys get everybody that they want to get and they tie everybody up. It is super entertaining.
And speaking of locations.
It has. I'm getting there.
Okay.
Super entertaining. A wonderful sense of, you know, mystery and unhappiness.
Okay.
Which is why I love noir films, because no one is ever happy.
Post-war malaise.
There is not a single... moment where anyone is happy. And that doesn't mean these films don't have humor,
right?
Because this one has some really funny moments, but the kind of humor that you have in a film noir is always
bleak chuckle,
very bleak and you know rueful kind yeah. of which again the best
your jam.
And then locations. There are so many great outside 1956 Los Angeles locations. At one point, Aldo Ray has to pick Anne Bancroft up because she's wearing such a tight gown that she cannot run fast enough from the bad guys. And so he is carrying her in his arms, running down Wilshire past the Beverly Hilton Hotel, which, by the way, that sign, that exterior, hasn't changed. Like, it got to keep itself.
Even with that Waldorf Astoria that just went
as out. Itself, yeah, the whole time, you know, you get to see Bocelli's restaurant, the newsstand that used to be there
around the corner from the Egyptian,
corner from the Egyptian movie theater, such a cool
that had newspapers from every city around the country.
Yeah, such a cool document of 1950s Los Angeles,
yeah.
and a wonderful noir and just. Great.
Great opening credits.
Great opening credits. Well, they always had great opening credits. They all do. Yeah.
Not all. This was when they were really starting to get away from just the cards, you know, and they were putting things over
right.
footage and whatnot. So.
Right.
Anyway, yes. Nightfall.
You can find this movie. It's not impossible.
Yes.
But really, do seek it out.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for listening, everybody.
We have no letters this week.
We do not. So.
Also, we have no time to do letters
yes,
this week. So that was a... good coincidence.
Works out fine. I got to skedaddle soon. Quick reminder to please check out the other podcasts that I do. I'm on Breakfast All Day, as
allow
we mentioned.
Me. Breakfast All Day.
Mm-hmm.
Who Shot You?
Yes.
A Film and a Movie.
And you should check out the current episode of A Film and a Movie, because one Dave White
yeah,
is
whatever.
The guest.
That's fine.
Where we talk about The Wages of Fear and Dunkirk.
Film and a Movie from the Bramble Jam Network.
That's correct.
Who Shot You from the Maximum Fun Network,
mm-hmm.
Breakfast All Day from the Breakfast All Day Network.
Exactly. Oh, and speaking of Max Fun, the Max Fun Drive winds up on Friday. Yeah. And instead of doing our usual finale wrap-up thing where we all get together at a place and do live stuff, we're all doing live remote stuff, and Dre and Iffy and I have a fun segment cooking up. So tune in for that. You can watch it, I think, on YouTube. Go to MaximumFun.org for more information. Check out our friends on the internet. Go see what Bibbs and Whitney are up to at the Critically Acclaimed Network. Listen to Schmoes Know. Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley. The Comics Canon. All Things Cozy. Sewers of Paris. Deck the Hallmark. Big Fat Gay Podcast. Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review while you're there. It does help us a lot. You can also, I forgot to mention, we have a Patreon.
Oh, yeah.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife for more content and other fun things. Check that out.
And I have one more piece of information that is of interest to everybody who's listening.
Mm-hmm.
Between the dates of August 10th-ish and August 17th-ish, you, Alonzo Duralde, will be finishing up your book. Your deadline is then.
Yes.
And that means that for about 8-ish days, there will be no recordings. There will be no Linoleum Knife. There will be no LKTV. There will be no Linoleum Knife and Fork. There will be no Linoleum Nights. There will be no Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife. There will be none of those things. There will be a cessation.
Radio silence.
Of recordings. However, that does not mean that if you are a Patreon person right now, that you're not going to get all of your episodes that you would normally get in a month. We're simply going to do them after.
Yes.
There'll be a lot of catching up time.
Hustling up and doubling up. And
somebody got to finish his book.
I do. So
publisher breathing down his neck. Hot and heavy.
Yes. So that'll be happening.
Yeah.
Where did I leave off?
We're done.
No. Leave us positive feedback in all the places that we stream, including Spotify and Google Play, Stitcher Radio, thelounge.com, CastBox, Podbean. You can follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. He has a new children's album out. For more about what he's up to, follow Blue on Twitter at Blutopia, BLEUTOPIA. And that is indeed it. So thanks for listening, you guys. Have a good week. Take care of yourselves and each other. We'll be back next time with more. And until then,
goodbye.